The Fabricator Podcast is presented by Nuts, Bolts, and Thingamajigs. As the foundation of the Fabricators and Manufacturers Association, NBT is dedicated to lifting up the next workforce generation throughout manufacturing. Through camps, scholarships, and donations, there are so many ways to support this incredible endeavor today. Learn more about Nuts, Bolts, and Thingamajigs by visiting NBTFoundation.org.
NBT. Fight. Fight.
All right. So one of the issues we have at, it's not really an issue, it's a challenge. One of the challenges we have here at the Fabricator Manufacturers Association is reaching out to younger generations to sell them on a possible future in manufacturing. And one of the ways that people try to do this is position the career field as cool. So we decided to cut to the chase and actually gain street cred by actually eating street cred. So this is, I saw this in a store in Louisiana when I went back to visit my mom, and they're wrap snacks. And I think I originally got them just for kicks, but come to find out it's actually a fairly good product. And
yes.
I'm trying wrap snacks wavy with Migos, barbecuing with my honey with a dab of ranch. And I will say that in the wavy form,
wavy. Yeah,
I like a thicker chip.
Yes.
It's quite tasty. Mm-hmm. And it actually hints a little bit at like some Asian flavoring, although that's not really called out on the bag. Mm-hmm. And the balance of both tangy as well as a little bit of sweetness hits home. So big plug from my guys at Wrap Snacks. We love you, and we're hoping your street cred rubs off on us. Because, believe it or not, we're probably not the coolest individuals in the room.
That's accurate. And don't forget, it's not limited to that one flavor. We've got a whole lineup right here, and these are only four of the more than a dozen, I believe, flavors.
I don't even
available.
Know. They have a lot.
There's also the little baby all-in flavor.
Yeah.
It's salt, vinegar, barbecue, onion, and garlic.
I think you crumble those up and put it on bagels. I'm not sure how to, the correct term or correct way to use that.
Don't forget, though, no limits.
Yeah. Master, you know what? And, a special plug for Master P for associating himself with this puff product.
Could be my favorite.
Barbecuing with my honey. And it's spot on, not too much,
yes.
Not too sweet. Really, 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 another really good product from these folks. So literally, saw this, had to pick it up, and I'm saying the chip game is almost where these artists game finds itself. So
they also have ramen cups, noodle cups.
They do have ramen. Yes. If you check the website, you can order that as well. I want hometown Louisiana. Little Boosie's Louisiana Heat. The little dull in the flavor initially, that heat kicks in right at toward the end. Pleasantly surprised. Not hot for hot's sake, but a nice way to enjoy a chip that you remember that you're eating, not that you'll forget. This one doesn't lay down on the job. Once again, no street cred.
I would say this, their flavor. Their flavor lineup sure seems to aim for the middle, but all of them are delicious. Sweet chili lemon pepper. You don't find that just anywhere.
No, you do not. Big fans. What do you do for, what is your normal chip selection?
Been hitting the Ruffles a lot lately.
Any special flavor?
Just straight out. Actually, I dip them in the French onion dip. It's been a hit in the late summer.
My brother, so the issue with some of these bigger companies is they roll stuff out and they kind of take it away before it gathers like a huge following.
Yes.
If anybody has any collection of Ruffles Buffalo Wild Wing, my brother's probably looking for it. He's probably willing to trade. I'm not sure what he has to trade. Maybe some old, an old chicken coop or something like that. But
I thought you were going to say Zima there for a minute.
Some old lawnmower parts. He'd have to go look through his backyard a little bit.
You'd have to first mow the lawn to find it.
Yeah. Kettle cooked chips is normally where I go. Like my boys, Zaps, down in Louisiana until, I shouldn't say this. Some people think maybe the flavoring might be a little bit off since corporate ownership occurred. But
oh, so it's taking a turn.
I don't know. I don't eat them that regularly because I'm trying to stay under $2.50.
Dollars a bag? Or?
What about Pringles? How do you feel about the canned chips?
Some interesting flavors. Yeah, I'm not down on them.
Issue with Pringles is they are not texturally the same as maybe some of the thicker chips I like. So as a result, I'll probably plow through them at a much more unhealthy rate than maybe your normal human. I'm pretty much like a dog. If you put too much food out in front of me, I'm going to eat it. So as a matter of fact, if this goes on a whole lot longer, all these things will be... This one is actually almost empty already.
Yeah.
So just be known that if it's a potato product, I'll probably enjoy it.
I know, I respect the Pringle can. Less smashed up chips. Less having to go, like, eat the crumbs out of the bottom of the bag.
Sometimes, isn't that the best, though?
I guess it depends what time of the day it is.
What is your take on potato sticks?
Nope.
It's a giant piece of potato.
Just give me a fry. Just give me a french fry.
I don't know, man.
The old school potato strings?
The sticks, not french fries.
Right.
Like
right.
In the can.
Yeah, in the can. Yeah. That was a staple at our family camping outings.
So I remember that. They used to come with a pull-top can.
Right.
Which is really giving children access to, like, razor-sharp can lids to access fried potato products.
Cheese balls used to.
Somewhere along the lines, the FDA didn't, like, step up and protect young people when they should
After
have.
Severed fingers was the, you know,
third They had to focus injury. On seatbelts first, giving Jeez. Kids.
What was I watching over the weekend? Somebody went to town on somebody in a movie. Oh, it was that flick, Allison Janney, called Lou on Netflix. She cuts somebody's neck wide open with a can top.
Ooh.
Yeah. It happened. I saw it.
That was part of the scene?
Yeah.
Or it was like a blooper?
No, it was neither an outtake nor a blooper. She effectively killed a mercenary.
Wow.
Because she herself was a badass.
So she would be a fan, then, of potato sticks.
I'm not sure that can could have cut a man's carotid artery. Maybe sliced a little bit. Maybe.
I just need a little.
You just do, right?
Yeah.
There's another movie I've seen where the assassin did this, like, walkthrough in a hospital with a scalpel and just sliced somebody's artery and just walked away.
Was that a Jason Statham movie?
I don't know what it was. I get all these things confused. I really need somebody to come home and, like, keep notes for me in terms of what I've watched and what I should be watching.
Perhaps a dry erase board.
In the living room?
Yeah.
That'd be good. So we went from potato snacks to killing people on potato film snacks. To what else?
Kids' safety. If we're going to loop it all the way back.
There you go.
Making metal manufacturing cool to kids.
Yeah. I will say, probably with Lil Boosie's support, these chips will not harm anybody.
They won't.
I keep calling them a sweet heat, but it's just plain heat.
Yeah, you know what they are. I think those are, that's right in the wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Rap Snacks like hot has stuff. Done a nice job.
I really enjoy it. So, Allison Janney's probably going to have a line of snacks out, maybe former West Wing actors. Would you, who's a Pop Estevez? What's his name?
Martin Sheen.
Martin Sheen. Would you eat a Martin Sheen potato chip?
They're slick.
Charlie Sheen.
Super greasy.
Charlie Sheen's Tiger Blood potato chips. I'd eat that.
So is this Lou? Is it a campy kind of dark comedy?
No, straight up action flick. Really? Like All revenge right. flick with a little bit of twist at the end.
Have
she's
you
former
seen...
former CIA operative so that gets pulled into something that she's a little too close to.
Gotcha.
Ooh.
Have you seen Nobody?
Yes.
With Bob Odenkirk?
That's my oh wait up I got a oh, that's I've got a Bob Odenkirk story here? Bob
he works in a fab shop.
Here you go. Who? Oh, in the movie.
Yeah.
Well, this is more real life. My daughter's friend at Marquette is friends with somebody going out with Bob Odenkirk's son.
Really?
So how many degrees of separation is that,
that
for
was
me?
Three.
He's got one on Four. His end. That's one. So girlfriend, friend. Friend of a friend, my daughter. Well, that's a little like 6 degrees. That's too far away.
Yeah. That's anyway. Not, you can't even mention it then.
Right.
Is it though? It sounded a lot closer when she was talking to me about it. I was all excited. Apparently a nice kid. Anyway, yes, Nobody's very enjoyable. Goes to town. It's been a while since I've seen it though.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's where he's the action.
Yeah.
Well.
It's a kind of a break from his normal.
Are we to believe, refresh my memory, are we to believe he's a former like
agent?
Mobster?
Not mob. He works for like some special government agency.
Oh, taking care of business.
Like deep state thing.
Deep state.
Deep state.
You know what?
Ooh, that
what do you think
like
deep state potato chips would taste like? Musty? Yes. Musty and gray. And
it would they wouldn't have any taste. You would just
it'd be all the dark potato chips.
They have purple potato chips.
Right?
They have purple potatoes. I've never eaten purple potato chips. I'm assuming they fry up the same way.
I would think so.
I think Bob Odenkirk loves potato chips.
He probably does. Or Saul.
Didn't he have a heart episode a while back? Maybe we should like direct this more toward a healthy conversation.
Endeavors.
Yes. What else is happening?
Which one?
So the big question is, when we have our first guest today, do we offer him rap snacks or do we leave it out here and just make him ask about it?
I think what we do is we play the suspense role.
Yeah, I think we just let
him.
And
make him ask us.
Yeah.
Just what don't say those? Anything until he acknowledges.
Don't even say any. Don't even acknowledge him. Just stare at him when he walks in.
And then let's do this from him to the chips. Pretty soon, he'll ask. Yeah.
So literally, I'm the only one going to be eating this whole
thing. No, out. And it's not.
Any
it's,
comments, Gareth? You've not commented on your favorite rap snack.
I did like the puffs.
Really?
Yeah.
Those are the best. Huh?
Really? Man.
I'm interested.
I think my favorite of these,
the Rick Ross looks interesting.
I feel like this, whatever it is almost going to be awesome on a chicken wing too.
Mm-hmm. Crumble it up.
I don't know. I've seen that like with the what do you call that thing? Flaming hot Cheetos.
Cheetos.
Where they crush them all up and like put it on chicken and bake it.
Mm-hmm.
And like reviews are like very kind of middle of the road.
That sounds better than like baking it in NyQuil.
Yeah,
that have you seen that?
There's nothing that should be allowed along those lines.
There's like a TikTok thing where people are baking chicken in NyQuil.
Maybe we should try that. Once again, be sure and subscribe. If we hit 10,000 subscriptions, we will bake something in a narcotic of our choosing at a later episode. We'll get a hot plate up here. Probably be fired after it.
Hot box.
It'll be worth it.
You could get Bob Odenkirk in that, for that one, too.
He'll actually probably come in for that.
Or his son.
His son,
his
actually.
His son's girlfriend's friend. You could easily get her in here.
Does this get me in trouble?
Because am be I going to
get beat up
friend.
Because I'm sharing this on public airwaves?
Airwaves is a loose
I'm about to call in my friends from Rap Snacks. To provide me with some street cred and protection.
No limits.
No limits.
That's right. What about Funyuns as a snack?
Loved as a kid, grow up. It's definitely one of those things that kind of lost its fastball as I got older.
Really?
Even the Flamin' Hot Funyuns, not much going on.
When's the last time you had them? Have you ever had them?
It's been a long time.
Who are you, Tom Brady?
It's been a long time.
What, do you give up bread?
Funyun just seems like the butterscotch of like the chip.
Really?
Yeah, it just seems like it's like kind of like a legacy brand that's never going away. But
no, I say like. I didn't say love.
You know what? I've gotten them a couple times here over the last few months. It's hard to, once you open that bag.
I think Cheetos are my, like, that's the thing where I can't stop. Mm. Like, I look like a dog that hasn't eaten in a week when I started eating those things.
I've seen that look.
And even when it, the hot, so I tried the Flamin' Hot Carolina Reaper, which doesn't sound like it should be available for public consumption. Finish that off.
Not where is that on the Scoville scale?
Reaper pepper?
That's up there.
I don't know.
Isn't it?
Oh
yeah, that's up there.
It's up there, but obviously not putting up.
Wait, so you had the Reaper not on a chip or anything?
It was Carolina Reaper flavored Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
Oh,
that's
okay.
A lot of words.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Here we go. We've got Scoville thing right here.
Here you go.
Tony Arnone.
Oh, it is
the Reaper.
2.2 million Scoville units. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, that's quite a jump.
Wow. So I have made jerk chicken with the habanero straight up. And one thing they tell you is to put those gloves on.
Oh, right.
Because if you don't touch your eyes.
Yes.
So yeah, you make that mistake. But there's other parts of the body you touch as well. They don't tell you that.
Did you know the banana is technically on the Scoville scale between it's, 0 and 500?
It's at the bottom, isn't it? Yeah.
I saw a frog eat a banana today on Twitter.
Really?
The big
that's not just
frog?
A frog.
Oh,
that
I
was
saw
like
that too.
You yes. saw that yeah. too. That was crazy, right?
It's the size of like a raccoon.
It was a bullfrog,
massive.
I did not like that.
Have you
whole
seen
banana?
Jim, have you seen this?
That thing was no, just sitting there.
I have not yet.
That frog was, he was
I
talking
was actually
about
working
this frog
a
as a
earlier.
Pet. It must have been his what? Birthday, too.
Was it on the leash or loose?
No, this thing, like, it was like still enough to where it almost looked like it wasn't real. Mm-hmm. And you know how frogs have like that glossy skin,
yeah,
so it looked
right,
almost fake.
Right.
He takes a banana. And first thing, he breaks the banana. How do you break a banana?
Man.
He pulls it apart,
it's a well-trained
puts it out in front
frog.
Of the frog, and that frog snaps at it like in a half
oh,
second.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Here you go, Jim.
Okay.
Look at that. It looks
oh
almost
my
fake,
gosh,
right?
That thing's a dog.
If it wasn't for that little jowl thing going back and forth.
Oh, yeah. See,
fake.
That's how you know he's alive and it's not fake.
Watch the dude break the banana. This is the thing that doesn't get enough, didn't point it out enough. How do you do
yeah,
that?
He just... Was it pre-cut?
I don't know.
You know what it is? That banana is just, it's
ripe
not
enough?
Too ripe. Right.
Yeah, I hate frogs, man. They're scared of a Jesus. Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. You see that?
Look at that.
Is that the second half?
Well, he must have eaten the first half.
He ate the
no,
first one.
The banana's in his hand, right?
Look at
and he pats it like
thing.
A dog.
Yeah.
And this thing ends in the weirdest way. Like, watch.
Oh, heaven
he
egg.
Does this and they just cut away.
Oh, you know what the frog's name is? It's Rocky.
But what was happening with the egg? Is that for digestion?
Here we are, yeah.
Is there a part two to this? Oh, I thought... Yeah,
he's
going to
come back. Look at that.
Yeah, I don't
is that real?
You know what else is nice? Isn't that one of those Formica kitchen tables from the...
Yeah, this is probably a new... This is probably a Waffle House.
Yeah.
He's just sitting there taping.
Wait a minute. That... All right, that almost
is this
looked
real?
Fake. That looked fake.
Maybe it's not real. Maybe it's animatronic.
Look how he pats that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Something about that doesn't seem real.
Oh, this
man.
Is... That's a CG
that
background.
Thing, you know he's had other small pets that have just disappeared.
See,
tonight.
That's fake. There's no way that's real. You see how that banana hovered?
There's no hover.
Go back. Go back about 10 seconds.
I love that Deep State was mentioned.
See,
you just
kind
of gloss over it. Now we have the case of the hovering banana with the frog. That's
it.
A big controversy.
TikTok.
See,
it's all...
There's something weird about the way his hand makes contact
mm-hmm.
with that... Back of that frog.
Yeah, that's fake. He's eating something else. Yeah.
I don't
that
know.
That thing's going to go for his head.
That's not real.
Digest
Am
that
I just looking
thing.
For something here that's not...
Yeah, that's not real.
He's pretty good on camera, though.
The frog or yeah. the guy?
The guy. Frog. You don't ask that frog to do much. Everybody knows that. When working with frogs, you never ask him to do
Well, we're going down the Twitter thread, so...
Did you read this one? Did you see that Twitter? Go back. With the green mask? Dude, this thing is frightening.
2,000-year-old green serpentine stone.
And what does the guy say above it? Do not put that on. We all know this.
Doesn't the Brady... If the Brady Bunch told
If the world
us
ends like this, dude, you were here at the beginning.
Isn't that what Jim Carrey found?
Exactly.
Yes.
And Jamie Kennedy.
And Jamie The son of the mask?
Yes! Which I've never seen,
wow.
but I assume it's kind of the same thing. And the dog, the Jack Russell Terrier that almost killed that town.
I think that they
That's
put
right.
that mask on that frog.
That was based on a true story, wasn't
Maybe,
it?
Maybe, yeah. Yeah. All because
See?
Of a Carolina Reaper.
What was happening?
Tragic news. The viral giant frog video is edited to make him look
Told
huge.
You.
Oh, it's fake. Welcome back to the Fabricator Podcast. Our guest is Colin Cosgrove. He is a longtime metal fabricator. Knew him when he was working at Laister Manufacturing in Chicago. He was our Fabricator of the Year in 2019, I think that's correct.
2021.
Man, 2021.
Yeah.
That's a little bit off.
Last,
Sorry about that.
The last 2 years have been a long day.
I have trouble keeping track of the months in the calendar because we published... We're working on magazines like 2 months ahead,
mm-hmm.
and people are always calling about what just came out.
Sure.
So I'm kind of stuck in this like netherworld of time. But Colin's now with SNC Electric in Chicago.
Yep.
And we're just chatting with him about his background, his business today, being a fabricator in Chicago, and some of his interest in workforce development. I think if you read the story that was in the Fabricator back in 2021. Some of this was covered, but we hope to explore it a little bit more. Thanks for joining us today.
I'm happy to be here. I'm excited to be here. It's kind of a fun experience.
Great.
So looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah. So we were chatting a little bit, but before we get into the metal fabricating, what you're doing now, tell us about yourself. How'd you get into the metal fabricating field?
Sure. And I'm going to, because I'm an argumentative type sometimes, I'm going to correct you on one thing. I was not the manufacturer of the year, fabricator of the year. The company was, the team was, that was just, I was fortunate to be in a position to to lead that team for a few years.
Yeah, and if there's anything I'm used to being is correct, it's
edit or, yes. You know.
So I got into manufacturing. I don't know how well the audio is going to come across here, but I wasn't born in Louisiana or the Midwest or upstate New York. I came from Ireland in late 1994, October of 94, and came over into Chicago. My cousin knew somebody who was the vice president of manufacturing in a company in the south side of Chicago who was constantly hiring, looking for people. And so they got me a job on the shop floor running parts on a press brake. And so the first time I walked into the factory, it was literally dark. You know, people talk about factories used to be dark. Yeah. Didn't you? It was literally dark because the electricity had been cut or something. It was an outage, right? And so I walk in, I'm going, oh, well, wow. I don't know what I'm in a new country, walking into people who were talking different languages. Literally, there was Polish and Russian and Spanish speaking, and it was just complete culture shock to me on so many levels. But it was the nucleus, right, of something. It was the beginning of something.
You sensed that from the very beginning?
No. It took me, you know, certainly a while to get my feet. And what I found was that, and let me back up a little bit. So the reason I came over, at least in part, I mean, Ireland has this long history of immigration. But in my particular context, I wasn't a good student in high school. And I was able to get into college in Ireland, but I wasn't a good student in college. So I wasn't coming from a kind of a good track record of what was I doing and where was I going kind of thing. And then come back to your answer or to your question, what I started finding in doing the work was just generating a bit of sort of self-success for a little bit. I was able to contribute. I was able to really kind of show up every day, get the work done, point out ways where maybe we could improve on something, and that just started to build a little bit. That did start to get to that place where I knew if I could stick with this, and there was a lot of good people, just good salt of the earth folks who were showing up every day, getting the job done, and I could fit in with that group and start thinking about improvements, opportunities to change, that started to take hold a little bit. And so within a couple of years, I was working in engineering. At that time frame, I worked on every shift. I worked third shift, I worked second shift, I worked first shift, I worked all hours of the day, worked in multiple different departments, ended up getting an opportunity to go into engineering. And I will never forget that day, because for me, it was sort of wow. That was a transformation. That was something I sort of did for myself, right? I earned. And I will never forget the day where they said, yeah, you got this opportunity, and, you know, took it from there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Did you have any manufacturing experience before? Just show
a, up a little bit. I had worked in Germany for 2 summers where I'd done some manufacturing there.
Okay.
And that was it. But didn't grow up with not a lot of manufacturing in Ireland. It's not a, you know, heavy industry place, right? Wasn't then either. And so really very little exposure to it growing up. Didn't have any great understanding of what it might even mean.
Yeah.
Right.
And so then just the opportunity to go into that environment, start building some knowledge, start building some awareness, self-education, and I still went back to school. I went back to school to study engineering and was able to do one of the things that where we flexed the hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go to school in the morning and go to work from, you know, 12 until 9 at night, and then another day I would have school in the evening. And just the company was great like that in terms of flexibility, but what I realized was I was spending so much time at work, and I was really committed to getting the work done. Because I think I felt a sense of responsibility to my teammates, to the people all around me. There was a responsibility to the work itself that I ended up missing classes. And I can distinctly remember that same vice president who gave me the job calling me one day and saying, I need you to come in today. It's like, and he said, I need this job to get run today, and you're the only one that can get this. Yeah. It was an amateur turret press program that needed to be edited. And I had to go into literally on the shop floor, type in G code to change the program to work on some special tooling that we were running, and there was nobody else that could do it. And I ended up missing classes, but I was being successful.
Right.
So I ended up pulling back out of school and just said, I got to take a break from this. And just focused on just the work and just kept learning at work and trying to learn, grow, contribute, show up into the work, and got a great piece of advice from a good friend of mine who said, when you go back to school, if you go back to school at some point, go back and do something you really want.
Yeah.
Because what I was kind of focused on was doing something I thought was useful.
Yeah.
Right.
Engineering would be a place to get a degree, to get a career. And I could potentially have some aptitude. It wasn't about a desire to know thermodynamic.
Right.
It just, that wasn't where it was coming from. And so within that context, he said, you know, go back later if you want to do something.
You did that, right?
I did. In my mid-30s, I went back and got a degree in psychology.
Right, right.
And I really loved it and really wanted to get it, and I'm using it, not right now.
Yeah.
Not,
right,
not as far as you know.
With two simpletons in a room, there's no need to rely on advanced education.
Did you just hear a bell?
I think it's time to eat a wrap snack.
Can I have a chip?
Yes. So I hear, as you're describing that, I hear, it seems like you have kind of a built-in bona fides, because you did it. You know, you came over from the, did everything, kind of worked everywhere, multiple shifts. Do you think that helps you in relating to people who might be in the same boat, who maybe had no clear path or idea of what they might want to do?
Oh, big time. Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, I think it's really important for anybody who's in a leadership position today. And I struggle with this, frankly, just sort of putting myself in a leadership position. I know fundamentally I am. I have 600 people in my group. I mean, there's I've been a president of a company, I'm a vice president. By some definition, I'm a leader. But at the same time, I struggle with that. Just it feels a little egotistical and narcissistic even to say that. So what I think about, though, the responsibility of somebody who is in a leadership position, and my framework for that tends to be Simon Sinek has this great quote that says leadership is about taking care of the people in your charge, not about being in charge of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, if you approach it from that perspective and you want to take care of the people in your charge, you really should try to understand what they're doing,
right,
and what they're engaging in every day and what their challenges are. And goodness knows I don't do that with any great level of perfection, right?
Right.
There's massive flaws in that, but the ability to maybe have a conversation with somebody about why sharpening a tool on a turret should be done versus just not having the capability to do that does allow for a relatability and hopefully a genuineness. And I think certainly for me, an appreciation for the work, an appreciation for the craft, appreciation for the skill and the competency and respect for that work that can hopefully be felt by everybody in the organization, from the entry-level person who shows up on the first day who might even be thinking about a possible job next year because they're an intern or a high school student, from that individual to the CEO of the company. We should, you know, I'm hopeful that I can sort of articulate some of what I just referenced in terms of respect for the craft, the skill, the knowledge, the capability, the education that people develop. Right? I mean, you go get an apprenticeship to be a tool and die person, you're doing 4 years easily, sometimes more, to get an education. You just come out of it and you don't have a ton of student debt and you've got a viable career in front of you.
Yeah.
Right? But there's legitimate education that goes along with that. And you've got people who spent 15 years on a shop floor being educated in the skill of metalworking, the various skills of metalworking. You know, we should have a ton of respect for that.
Yeah. I think that's a key word, just respect. I mean, that's probably good advice for a lot of aspects of life.
Absolutely.
The other part I was going to bring up is that also by having that experience all the way, does that make you a better estimator? You know, because sometimes I think that disconnect between engineering, quoting, if they don't have that experience from the floor, leaves them a little bit reliant on so-and-so's memory, so-and-so's notes.
Yeah.
It's kind of the full-rounded employee that these metal fabric companies love.
Yeah, I think the most successful engineers in a manufacturing environment are spending time in the manufacturing environment, right? You don't need to have come up through the plant to be a good estimator. It certainly helps. But if you haven't done that, if you're coming out of college and you're looking for that opportunity in an engineering role, and you come in and you learn from the people that are there, that are doing the work in the day-to-day grind of the shop floor application, whether it's on turrets or lasers or an iron worker or, you know, precision welding, machining, turning, whatever it might be, that engineer who comes in with curiosity and with respect for the work and a desire to listen can go into that production environment, use those skills, that curiosity, that knowledge that they may have, to knowledge meaning in terms of connecting with people, and go listen, be curious, and learn, as well as bringing, what if they're, again, if they're a qualified engineer, bringing their capabilities, their, I mean, what they're learning, and the Power BI tools and the CAD tools that are available are just, they're incredible today. So somebody coming in with some baseline there, and then marrying that together with the shop floor experience, and looking to just spend time listening, observing, watching, and absorbing, that can become very powerful too.
Now you're with CNS Electric.
Essence.
I'm sorry. SNC. I wrote it down because I knew I was going to mess it up. SNC Electric.
Sure.
How does that compare to what you were doing at Laystrom when we first met, and how's business?
It's great. There's a lot of things. So I've known of SNC Electric for many years, and one of the challenges with SNC is it's a hidden gem. I mean, SNC is the biggest manufacturing company in the city of Chicago.
Wow.
Now, some other people will tell you it's Ford, but they're from Detroit, so I don't care.
Yeah.
Right? They can go back to Detroit. That's okay. Not the company. We're happy to have the organization here. But no, it's just we are the largest, certainly homegrown. We've been around for well over 100 years. We're making world-class innovative products that literally keep the lights on.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we do. Right. The power on, the lights on, whether it's to hospitals, to office buildings, to make sure that, your dinner is warm in the oven, right? It's all of that is all reliant on the grid. And what we do is provide resiliency to the electrical system that surrounds us, right? So it's a fabulous place to be in terms of the business opportunity.
Right.
So we're growing like a weed.
Yeah.
We're doing really well. We've hired over 500 people this year.
Wow. And how many people globally work there?
Wow. Globally, we're 3,500 people.
Okay.
We got about, I'm not sure the exact number, somewhere in between 2,000 and 2,500 in Chicago. And we're in Wisconsin, we're in Canada, a little bit of Mexico, Florida, California, but those are smaller divisions. The main population is here in Chicago on the north side. And I know you're curious a little bit about, like, what's it like doing business in Chicago.
Right.
And it's funny because there's so many misconceptions. So Money Magazine, I think earlier this week, rated Rogers Park as the fifth best place to live in the country.
Right.
Rogers Park on the north side of Chicago, which is SNC's home.
Okay.
We've been there for 100 years, right? Fifth best place to live in the country. Chicago was just the sixth year in a row. I think it was Condé Nast said it's the best big city in North America.
Right.
6 years in a row. And yet, there's a ton of bad publicity about Chicago. And so there's this real tension about what's really happening, what's in the community, what's happening in the city. And it's very dynamic, and it's difficult to kind of answer holistically because there's so many different layers going on and so many different parts to the city.
Yeah.
But we've been committed to the city for a long time. And a lot of our workforce can walk to work.
Right.
And can take a very short commute to work. And having the opportunity to have so many people in our community, impacting our community, the broader community of the state, the environment, is a phenomenal place.
Yeah.
And we're able to draw from a lot of communities around the Chicago area where we have machinists or fabricators or engineers or anybody else coming into work.
Right.
And you look like you got a question.
No, I think people, you know, one of the weird dynamics, it actually kind of creep into interviews with some of these metal fabricators is the over emphasis on the prototypical farm boy who grew up in the, you know, and was able to work with his hands, and they're all in search of this kind of like this perfect fabricator.
Yeah.
When in essence, you know, a company, you know, two companies you've worked for, there's such a population density in Chicago that at least body-wise, I would imagine it's easier to find people if there's just thousands around you, as opposed to kind of being located in these far-flung places where a lot of people are leaving these towns and and flocking to metro areas just because of opportunity and conveniences. And it's this weird dynamic I've seen over the last, particularly 5 years, as you know, just with the polarization of people in the U.S. where city folk against country folk, and it's just when you bring that up to me, it kind of unless you live in the city, you don't understand that. You know, that certainly there are challenges, but it's, you know, one zip code does not define whole landmass. So, in agreement with you, it's one of those things where I if anything about me, when I ask a question or interest in the city, is just the sheer, you know, getting trucks down those streets. You know, it's the sheer just like actually doing the work that amazes me more so than almost anything else.
Well, yeah, the question that I was thinking in my head is, you know, as your, we'll just say your profile suggests, right? Maybe it's finding a person that is a good fit and then giving them the respect that you talked about or the training, and then, you know, getting them to do the job that you want them to do versus, like Dan was saying, somebody who has X amount of either years or months or whatever you want to call it with of experience.
Yeah.
So you're finding the right person first and then you're giving them the skills.
Yeah, we have phenomenal training programs at SNC. We've got real depth in our training programs, and they're quite structured. And the advantage of being the scale that we have is that we get to have some layers where we can have people who are fully dedicated to really, really developing systems where we can take somebody in who is coming out of high school or is younger or looking for a career change and maybe doesn't have a ton of manufacturing awareness or knowledge or experience. And we have systems we can use to build up their knowledge and skills. And we can partner with associations, we can partner with other external folks, like Jane Addams Resource, for example, JARC. They do great work in the city. And there's lots of partners we have where we can develop training programs, but we have them internally too. And you're right, we can look for people that are, that really, it's a development opportunity. And we have, because we've been able to do that for many, many years, and because we've been on a really good growth path for a long time, and we're accelerating right now because of the market that we're in, and we've got great people out there marketing and selling our products, we're on a really good growth path. Like I said, we've hired hundreds of people this year. We're planning on hiring hundreds more. We've got a lot going on. We also have 700 people in the organization with over 25 years of experience.
Wow.
So we have enormous longevity and depth. And what that does is allow those people to move up in the organization, but also for them to have a requirement really to provide training to others, to provide development opportunities for others. But it means that we have deep knowledge and expertise within the organization itself. And people are building careers. Mm-hmm. And we're an ESOP.
Oh, wow.
So even more benefit to the organization and the company and the employees who are employee owners.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got, it's an exceptional company, and we're under the radar, which I'm working to change a little bit, and many others are too. And there's so many opportunities though that we have to provide today in manufacturing. I think we all in manufacturing, and we're doing this at Laystrom. So Laystrom's on the west side of the city, and Laystrom's been growing for many years. I've been on the Inc. 5000 3 years in a row, maybe 4 years now. And the Inner City 100, which is an amazing group, that's the 100 fastest growing companies in under-resourced areas in the country. Laystrom was on that last year and probably would be this year again because they've been growing so well, and they've been doing similarly, looking for people and looking for development opportunities also in the city, right? And what we need to do, I think broadly in manufacturing, is continue to tell the stories of what we're really doing well and the careers that we are allowing people to come into and build, because I'm not a unicorn in this, right? In 28 years, I've gone from entry-level press brake operator to vice president of the largest manufacturing company in the city of Chicago, being president of the company for 7 years before that. Like, I'm not the only person who's had that path or some version of that path. And we need to just continue to do a better story as manufacturers of telling the story of career opportunities, not just at S&C, not just at Laystrom, but at a lot of manufacturing companies where people can come in, be educated, contribute. And you've got a ton of organizations that are building culturally relevant companies where so many people, young folks today, and there's a lot of talk about people wanting purpose in their jobs.
Right.
A lot of talk about it. Yeah. I would argue people have always wanted purpose in their jobs. Always. I think you go back to somebody who's somebody who's 70 years old right now and say, did you want to have purpose in your job when you were 30? Of course they did.
Right.
But is it amplified today? Is it more public? Is it more media driven in a sense? Sure. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we have to do, if we can understand that, is build companies that do understand that respect that.
Yeah.
You know, that respect can be a two-way street, right? That somebody is coming in. And yeah, sure, if somebody, you know, does that knock, right, that people coming in, they want to be promoted every year. Okay, sure, you can set expectations and you can talk about what a path looks like. And at the same time, build that path.
Yeah.
And say, yes, we value input. We value opportunity. We value diversity. We value different people at different levels in an organization contributing to the conversation about where we're going. We value, you know, things like environmental impact, for example. Like one of the great things about S&C is the stuff that we make helps provide grid resiliency. So we have tons of product going to Florida right now because of Hurricane Ian that just came through there and devastated so many communities. We have a ton of product going there to try to rebuild, to contribute to rebuilding those communities. That's great. Mm-hmm. Internally in the organization, we're at 98%+ landfill free.
Wow.
We have been driving and this opportunity to contribute in a different way than just the products themselves, but actually within the organization. What can we do to make a difference, right? And that's what we're really trying to hope that we can continue to develop with anybody in manufacturing. We were doing this at Laystrom, we're doing this at S&C. For anybody, what can I contribute? How can I be part of the solution to what we're seeing around us on so many different levels and layers? And if we can do that and nurture that, how powerful is that?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Are you making those connections you feel with young people by kind of sharing those aspects of your company?
Well, that's partly why I'm here.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Is because I've been trying for years to be a voice and advocacy for manufacturing in general. And we've had conversations. I've been having conversations with various people in various departments within the city about advocating for manufacturing.
Yeah.
There's a number of different organizations that are doing some work this month because it's Manufacturing Month. So I believe we're having a lunch next week with the mayor at MHUB.
Oh, wow.
And others in promotion of manufacturing. We've got conversations.
MHUB, just for people.
I'm sorry, yeah.
It's MHUB over is, there off yeah. of... Chicago River, right?
Yeah, and it's focused on advanced manufacturing, advanced tech, and really doing good work in celebrating and uplifting small dynamic startup community, right? And we're going to, we and many other manufacturers are going to go and have a conversation with the city about that. We're talking with city colleges. So we just did an event at Triton College, a hiring fair just for manufacturing, mostly focused on manufacturing, at Triton College, about which is City College on the west side of Chicago, just 2 weeks ago.
Right.
The conversation we're having with CPS is, with Chicago Public Schools,
mm-hmm.
is about revitalizing training programs, CTEC, career and technical education mm-hmm. within CPS. Those are discussions, and that's not just S&C. Lots of people are trying to have discussions with CPS about that. But one of the reasons to do that is as we were coming out of 2020 into 21, the city was focused on what are the areas we need to kind of rebuild. We're still at that point really in the middle of the pandemic, right? How do we bring the city kind of back to life, right? That sort of initiative mm-hmm. economically. And manufacturing was one of the sectors. And so we're on a call with various different, and this is a bunch of manufacturers came together. Ford was actually there, people like Friedman Seating, Laystrom, S&C was there. And one of the things that somebody from CPS got on the call, and they said in a survey that they did, this was someone doing career planning in CPS. I don't know what their title was.
Right.
They said in their survey, 28% of their graduating students, 28% of the graduating students in CPS wanted to work with their hands. Those are our people.
Yeah.
They want to work with their hands. Now, they could be a mechanic, a plumber, a carpenter, someone in one of the various trade unions, or a manufacturer, just as well. But there's a lot of people out there who want to work with their hands, who are more inclined towards that way of thinking about life.
Right.
And we need to celebrate them, lift them up, realize that they don't just have a career path if they go to college. There's lots of other career paths they can have. And certainly starting their career, you can start in, like I did. Yeah. Again, I'm not a unicorn in this situation. There's lots of other people I know who started at one level, ended up at a higher level, much higher, built good careers, put food on the table every night for their family, put money into a 529 plan for their kids to go to college or whatever plan it might have been, and went on vacation every year, and that was funded because they were in manufacturing careers that were built for the long term. And that's still a viable career in this country.
Yeah. Do you feel the momentum? I mean, obviously, you've been a long-time proponent. I have seen communities across North America, at least U.S., where people have invested in welding schools. They're trying to revitalize their VOTEC programs,
yep,
whether it be related to woodworking, machining, fabricating. There seems to be an interest. Is it resulting? Do you see the results of a lot of these efforts, at least in your local, from your local perspective?
I think it's early to see the results in terms of the labor market, right? I think there's still a lot being developed.
Yeah.
And if those folks going through those programs, you know, they're going to be coming in, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, right?
Right.
Some of it's already happening for sure. Some of it is. We clearly need more, but you know, College of Lake County is doing that. They're investing, right? There's many different, like exactly as you said, around the country, around the city, around the suburbs. Even high schools are getting into it. They're revitalizing some of their technical programs, which is phenomenal. And I think one of the things we need to do, I think we have to do as manufacturers, and I know people who do this. I know many manufacturers who go to high schools and they will work with the high school. They maybe even provide funding to the high school. They will go and just do career days. They will go and educate. There's lots of manufacturers do it, and we need more manufacturers to do it. We need more people to tell the story of what's been successful, why it's been successful, why these kids who maybe are not thinking about manufacturing. And you know, one of the spins that I've had on this for a few years is if you're a parent,
yeah,
around my age, 45 to 55 age group, for example, you've probably been told for all of your formative years that manufacturing is dying in this country.
Right.
If you go back, so a 50-year-old right now, you go back 30 years when they were 20, in the late 80s, early 90s time frame, you were being told, and there was good evidence, that manufacturing was dying a slow and ugly death in this country. And you legitimately probably saw your father, your mom, your uncle, your aunt, your cousin, company was shut down, getting laid off. I mean, that was happening. We can't deny it, mm-hmm, it was real. We went from 20 million jobs in manufacturing in this country down to 12.5 million, right? We know this happened. And if you've been told that for 30 years, and you now have a teenage kid, are you going to say, you know what you should do, Junior? You should go on right down there to the manufacturing company and see if you can be a welder.
Yeah.
Right? Or you're going to say,
bright future.
No, you should go into some other tech. Yeah. Well, guess what? We're tech too.
Yeah.
Right? You should go into something that's safer. Guess what? Our safety record per DART rate federally is better than most tech companies. Same was true at Laystrom. And there's lots of manufacturing companies operate the same way. Oh no, Junior, you should go do something where you're on a computer all day. You should go do something that needs a college degree to get you $150,000 in debt. Or maybe not, right? And so there's an opportunity to re-educate parents, to re-educate the general public. And I do think it's happening. I do think we're moving in the right direction. But we have to not just reach the kids,
yeah,
but also reach the parents.
Right.
And I come from, you know, and you've known this my last number of years. I've been trying to, you know, doing this advocacy, doing this conversation,
right,
because I think it's compelling. I think it's meaningful. It's been meaningful to me in my life.
Yeah.
I've seen it be meaningful to many other people. And I think that opportunity is still very real because we're not at 12.5 million jobs anymore. we're higher than that. We're at maybe over 14 million maybe in the country right now.
Working its way up.
And we're going to have a 2 million job shortfall by the end of the decade.
Yeah. Well, let me ask this question, because we touched upon it earlier when we were talking about how busy you are right now. This is going to continue for a while.
Yeah.
Correct? I mean, I imagine we all know the grid needs to be modernized, and
yep.
if you've lived in Texas during the winter or out west during the summer, you know, there's a little bit of stress out there, and everybody's talking about electric cars, and no one knows what to believe. But from your perspective, your company is in a good position. I would imagine you would kind of equate that for most of manufacturing, at least in the U.S.
Yeah, I think there's tremendous opportunity, and even something like the CHIPS Act. I mean, you got 54 billion, whatever, 50 plus billion to spend on chips. Now that's not metal fabricating, but guess what? Those chips go inside metal fabricated product. And so there's this knock-on effect that will be a ripple through the economy. I believe the government, right, wrong, or indifferent, is not a political statement, but the government is going to spend and is spending more money in manufacturing and manufacturing infrastructure than has been, and in broader infrastructure, which will then influence manufacturing.
Yeah.
Because somebody's going to build all those Tesla charging stations.
Yep.
Somebody's going to build all those everybody else charging stations, right? All of that has to come together.
Right.
And the more we can manufacture in this country, the better. I'm not against globalization. It has its place.
Yeah.
I'm also pro, let's have lots of manufacturing in this country. I think both can be true, right? The global economy is, I believe, going to continue to grow. There's challenges for sure.
I feel like I'm in a church. Amen.
Amen.
Well, I think that's a good point that you bring up, too, that, you know, some people say, well, that's not exactly manufacturing. However, it will be there, or it's going to come. It'll overlap.
Absolutely.
It'll hit the industries that fabricators involved in at some point.
Yeah, I mean, if you continue, which we have to do, we have to continue to build infrastructure in the country. Maybe roads are getting redesigned in a different way because we have more electric cars. Well, all of the road work that gets down around those uses utility vehicles.
Right.
Uses bobcats and skid steers. And who makes those? Caterpillar, John Deere, Case New Holland, Ford, whomever.
Elgin street sweepers.
Absolutely. And so the downstream impact of those is very significant and is still a tremendous opportunity for manufacturers in this country. And so, yeah, it's an exciting place to be.
Yeah.
Not without its challenges, for sure, but it's an exciting place to be.
Yeah, we're up against it a little bit. I'll ask you this, just more personal question. Do you miss anything from Ireland, being in the States this long? Or has globalization helped with that?
I mean, so globalization has helped enormously.
Yeah.
You know, I when I came over here, the first time I went back was the following, so it was like 14 months later. Was the first time I went back to, because my whole family's still in Ireland.
Right.
Mm. And I went back and I took an Aeroflot flight overnight. And it was a Russian airline. They're defunct, I think. So the flight that I took overnight, there was two people I sat beside and neither one of them had been back to Ireland in over a decade.
Wow.
Because that was how systems worked back then. There just wasn't the same connectivity. And so there may be phone calls, letters, whatever, but that's all you had. And fast forward 10 years later, or a little bit more than 10 years later, one of my treasured memories is of my father, who passed away a few years after my first daughter was born, but my father, who was a singer, singing to my daughter on Skype.
Wow.
Mm. Well, he was in Ireland, she was over here, and singing her a lullaby on Skype, right? So the impact of technology in not just how we do our work, but, and then we've seen this obviously accelerating in Zoom and everything else the last number of years. But yeah, the impact has been enormous in terms of the change in globalization. That's just a personal example of it. But Ireland's a very different country even now from what we were just there a few months ago, from when I left. And the sense of community that you still have in Ireland is, it's still really palpable. The friendliness of the people is still extraordinary. The idea of just sort of having fun and taking life as it comes at you is still really powerful. So there's a lot of great community elements of the Irish that are still kind of right there. And you know, we see some of it.
Do you run into that in Chicago? Because I know that my wife's cousin married an Irishman who had been to Chicago multiple times, and actually had cousins that were kind of relocated here.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly know a few people here in the Chicago area that are Irish. There's very few Irish people in manufacturing.
Okay.
Now, if you're in the trades, if you're in plumbing, if you're in, you know, firefighter,
hospitality,
you
know,
different areas, it's a completely different story. But in manufacturing, I've met very few, and so that's been a little, you know, unfortunate from my perspective.
Yeah.
But you know, that sense of community you can find in a lot of different places. You know, I've argued that, you know, most manufacturers or most companies, I don't use the people use the sort of this company like a family thing. I don't do that. Talk about community. We're a community, and I think that is, to me, is a more valid way of thinking about it. And S&C is a community. Lacedum is a community, and so where you can find our communities, and we can find it within manufacturing, within fabricating. You know, FMA has its own community of sorts when you get people together every year for the annual meetings, and
correct.
You get to meet friends that you've met there over time. I mean, those are different ways of building community. So I think that sense of community that I'm talking about in Ireland, you can find that in a lot of different ways if you go and work at it and seek it out. And you can find it in, I mean, I actually live north of the city. I live in Highland Park. And, sorry, we had an utter tragedy this year, obviously on July 4th. But the sense of community that was really revealed for me in a different level after that is, you know, it's comparable in a way. I mean, community is an incredibly powerful thing. And which is probably partly in the manufacturing community why I do this. Like, why am I here talking about this? It's sort of more people in manufacturing hopefully kind of come into the community, speak to the community, represent the community, because there's a lot of good to be said about it.
Yeah, expand it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot for joining us today. I'll make a plug for the FMA annual meeting, February 28th through March 2nd. I think I did get those dates right.
Las Vegas.
It's in Vegas, actually. I forgot about that. That's probably also important. You're invited to come.
All right.
I know Mr. Deck from Lacedum joined us last year.
Very good.
He's down in Miami.
Great guy.
Very good guy.
Yeah.
But thanks again, and we welcome everyone to tune in again and join this community and be a part of it and help support metal fabricating. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.